Cigars International is the ultimate destination for premium handmade cigars. Visit www.cigarsinternational.com/TFLtruck or use code TFLtruck at checkout for 20% off plus free shipping on your entire order. Known as the industry leader, Cigars International offers the largest selection, unbeatable prices, and a customer service experience that is second to none. One of the best things I can think of as someone who enjoys a good cigar is spring, summertime, being able to hang out with my friends on the deck or even go camping and have a few stogies while enjoying the outdoors and the warm weather. It is one of my favorite things. Cigars International offers unbeatable deals and discounts, making it easy to stock up on your favorites or try something new without breaking the bank. Visit www.cigarsinternational.com/TFLtruck or use the code TFLtruck at checkout for 20% off plus free shipping on your entire order.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hey guys, welcome to TFL's Talking Trucks. And Case, where the hell is Andre?
I know, he's out of town. He's missing his own podcast.
I know. Actually, Andre is in Korea.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. So there's going to be videos coming from Korea. Is he there with Hyundai?
He's there with Hyundai, yeah. Of course he's there with Hyundai. I don't think he's driving any trucks. I wish he was, because there's that new Kia, right?
The Tasman.
Yeah, but you got me. And I thought, you know, it'd be fun to kind of go over the trucks that we've had over the last year or so and kind of talk about what was good and what was bad, kind of a fleet update, and then discuss, you know, the things that we have loved and or hated. So I'm going to start with a really hot take.
Oh, yeah?
I am, yeah. I actually like the Cybertruck.
What a way to start off a truck podcast.
I know, just get right into it.
Kick things off by upsetting everyone. I'm going to take
disagree?
The other side of it. So explain, what was it that you loved so much about the Cybertruck?
So, yeah, let me take a step back. So we bought the Cybertruck, and obviously, you know, there's this saying, right, under-promise and over-perform. And I think what Tesla did was the exact opposite.
They
over-promised and underperformed. So Mr. Musk said that it would sell more than the F-150.
Yeah, didn't quite by a huge margin.
And then, you know, he said that it would cost $39,000.
Didn't cost $39,000 at all. Maybe double.
Yeah, or triple. If you got the Foundation Series tri-motor, right? That was $120,000.
Yeah.
So ours was $100,000. It was a dual motor. The first thing I liked about it, which I thought is really cool, and now obviously I have the equipment but not the truck, but you can use it for a vehicle to load. So it's the cheapest Tesla battery system you could buy for your house, because a Tesla,
which is more of a statement about the cost of Tesla batteries than the affordability of the truck.
A Tesla Powerwall is like 13 kilowatt hours.
Yeah,
and it costs $10,000.
Yeah, which is that's not a lot of power for the money.
So you can get a 100 kilowatt hour battery in a Cybertruck now for like $80,000. So if you're looking at it just as a power wall.
So it's a discounted power wall, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it is cool to have this ability to actually plug your vehicle into your house. And then if the power goes out, you could power your house with it. And that's a lot. I mean, 100 kilowatt hours. Is, just to put it in perspective, you could probably power your house easily for a week if the truck were completely charged up.
It is. But I've got to imagine it must be more affordable than that to get a generator system at your house. I haven't looked into that for my own home, so I don't actually know the cost breakdown of getting a generator to power some of the essentials in your house. It has to be less than a Cybertruck.
Yeah, I'm sure it's less than a Cybertruck, but you can't drive it around.
Yeah, that's true.
So let's start with that.
I'm not sure I want to drive the Cybertruck around, though.
So I love the fact that it had this secondary purpose beyond what most vehicles have, right? And the purpose was actually pretty useful. And I remember, like, oh gosh, back in the day when the Leaf first came out, that had a system called CHAdeMO, right?
Yep.
So we use NACS, which is a North American charging standard. We use CCS, and the Japanese use CHAdeMO. And one of the reasons the Japanese use CHAdeMO was that it was bidirectional.
Yeah.
So the idea was that you could potentially use Leafs in Japan to store energy. So, for instance, when the energy usage is high, right, then usually the grid is this kind of living thing. Power gets sucked out during the day when a lot of people are at work and a lot of people are using air conditioning, yada, 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 right, computers. And then at night it kind of goes quiet. But it would be great if you could save that power for when you need it so you don't have to generate it on the spot. And that was the idea in Japan, that you could actually store energy in these people's homes in their Leafs. And then when they needed it at night, you could either suck it out or put it in or vice versa. And I thought that was always very clever. And the Cybertruck allowed you to do that. So I think it was kind of ahead of its time.
It's a cool idea. I'm not sure it's enough of a motivator for me, at least, to want to spend nearly $100,000 on those trucks, especially considering the depreciation that we've been seeing with some Cybertrucks that are starting to hit the used market. And it's pretty steep, understandably, because that's true of most EVs. The other things with the Cybertruck, and we'll talk about some pros and cons. One thing that I will grant you is, of all the EVs that we've tested off-road, the Cybertruck is up there with the best of them, and I still don't think they quite compete with, obviously, Raptors or anything with front and rear lockers like a ZR2 on the GM side of things, whether it's a midsize or a full-size. There's a lot of really good off-road trucks out there, but the Cybertruck, as far as electric ones go, pretty decent. I'll grant it that. But there are things like the build quality on the truck, especially—
Horrendous.
Fit and finish.
Horrendous.
I mean, how many people here at the office were scarred?
Nathan.
By it. Nathan
tore a pretty good sized hole in his arm.
I know Zach had a mark on him from the truck.
Okay.
Your vehicle shouldn't cut you.
No, it shouldn't. But let's put that all aside for a second. I think the biggest issue with the Cybertruck is a truck part. I remember watching the Jason Kniezma video when it first came out because they gave him access to it.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, this guy knows cars and he likes the Cybertruck because he is judging it like a car. So if they had called it the Cybercar, right, the biggest, baddest Tesla you could buy, I would be all over it.
Or the Cyber Camino, a car with a bed?
Yeah, yeah. So if you look at it that way, which it kind of does have a giant bed with a giant trunk, then it really is a really useful tool. But the problem is once you call it a truck, then you get into things that trucks do, like towing and like hauling. And when you're doing all that, the Cybertruck kind of falls short.
Yeah, the bed had limited utility.
Yeah, it went inside. It was not square.
Yeah,
right.
It's kind of an awkward shape.
Yeah, so the walls kind of go in other words, become narrower as you get deeper. And I found that out when we were moving stuff to our bureau in Moab, and I had these square boxes, and all of a sudden I couldn't fit the second box in there. And I'm like, why isn't this fitting? And then I realized that it was because the kind of the bed got narrower as you got closer to the cab.
It's also crazy to me that they didn't put a digital rear view mirror on that truck, because it's such a tech-centric vehicle. And the rear window is completely useless if you have the tonneau cover.
It had a camera mirror on it.
It had it in the screen.
Right, but not up here. You're exactly right.
Your actual rear view mirror was just a standard mirror.
What do you expect for $120,000? Come on,
yeah.
Case.
Well, God forbid they put a screen in the mirror, right?
Yeah.
Because there's screens everywhere else.
Yeah, I agree. So
visibility out the back was really bad.
Yeah, yeah. So
the mirrors weren't very good for towing either, so visibility
in general. No, as a truck, it wasn't great. Finally, when they enabled the lockers, Cole and I took it up Mosquito. And the problem with it was, which is not just a problem to the Cybertruck, it's a problem to most vehicles with air suspension, and that is once you raise it to get more ground clearance, it becomes a really harsh ride.
Yeah, and very limited articulation at that
very
point.
Very limited articulation.
Land Rovers figured that out with their cross-linked air suspension that they've had for a long time. That's an air suspension that, unlike the majority, can actually articulate reasonably well when it's all the way jacked up into its tall off-road height. But yeah, there were limitations to the Cybertruck off-road. I still maintain that for an EV off-roader compared to something like a lot of the Hummer EVs or the Rivians, Cybertruck is good, maybe better than...
Yeah, because it had dual rear lockers. Real lockers.
Mechanical. Because the e-lockers just don't work.
No, e-lockers, and sorry...
They just don't.
Sorry, Rivian, and sorry, Hummer. I mean, they're like... When they first came out, they were like 50% of the way to a rear locker.
Yeah.
And now they're maybe like 70% of the way. So they work.
But it's just not the same.
Look, the real problem with the Cybertruck wasn't necessarily a mechanical one or, its capabilities. I mean, all that stuff was actually pretty good and in line with most electric vehicles.
It wasn't bad at everything.
Yeah, at most. But you know, it's not any worse or better than a Lightning or an EV Silverado. Okay, it's worse than EV Silverado in terms of range. But for the most part, it kind of fell. Sure. And then it did have, like I said, this innovative technology. Rear wheel steering was really cool.
Steer by wire, which is a little strange to get used to. So it's not maybe necessarily my favorite thing. But to your point, it is objectively innovative.
Yeah, they threw kind of everything at it.
Yeah.
The problem was that it became a political hot potato, right? It went from being, look, trucks are tools, as Ram likes to say, the biggest tool in your toolbox, and this became the biggest political statement.
When it was weird at times how strong of reactions people had to a thing that's ultimately an appliance. Could you imagine if you had a refrigerator in your home that people would flip you off for having?
I know.
At times kind of how it felt?
A Maytag, you mother!
Yeah, but at the same time, it did make the Cybertruck not that fun to be seen in and to drive around in.
It just became political
it is ugly.
In the worst of possible ways.
Yeah, so... That was a bit of the experience with the Cybertruck. Should we move on to a truck that's actually good?
Yeah.
So the Ranger Raptor, just recently sold.
Yeah.
And it was hard to let go of that truck because it was such a good machine, especially for the money. And people might argue with this a little bit because the starting price on the Raptor is around 55,000. Ours with one or two options was 57 because we got the graphics on the side.
Yeah, there aren't many options, like stickers.
It's like that, and I think you can option a different wheel. But for 55, I know that's a lot of money for a midsize truck, but in this day and age and compared to the vehicles that it competes against, what the Raptor gets you, good deal, because a Tacoma TRD Pro or Trail Hunter is $8,000 more expensive.
65?
Yeah. They're like 63, 64,000 versus 55, so almost $10,000 more.
And we had that AT4X GMC.
The AEV edition.
That was 72.
With all the goodies. Yeah, super expensive.
Yeah.
And the Ranger Raptor's got front and rear locker. It's got a twin turbo V6, not a four cylinder,
which is
becoming pretty uncommon. A 10 speed instead of an 8 speed, like a lot of its competitors.
You can tune it. We had Ford tune it for us
or the
dealership.
Ours went from 405 horsepower stock, which is great in a midsize truck, already up there of anything that you can buy. We tuned it for less than $1,000 and got 455 horsepower, 536 pound feet of torque, which in a midsize truck makes it a bullet.
Yeah, I mean,
it was fast.
We drag raced it, and we proved just how quick it was. In fact, we drag raced it against the RHO, remember? I mean, we did it against full-size trucks because it was so quick. And it wasn't until we got up to the performance trucks in the full-size category that it actually started losing in the drag race.
The Ranger Raptor tuned at 455 horsepower is 5 more horsepower than an F-150 Raptor with the standard EcoBoost. So that's a lot of power in a midsize truck. Made it a ton of fun to drive. The suspension on it, Fox Live Valve, was really good suspension kit. A good handling truck if you care about that. You could rally it around in the dirt like a rally car, and with the front and rear lockers,
came
you could
with
rock
KO3s.
Crawl pretty well. Yeah, KO3s, great tires.
From the factory.
So that was an awesome truck. And a decent interior, too. I don't think the best in the world, but it felt special.
Yeah, the two things I loved about ours. First, I love the fact that it was this chili red, which was the first
color. Yeah, it was a good color.
It was a really good color. And I love the fact that it was kind of stealthy. That truck, unlike some of the other Raptors, I'm talking to you, Bronco Raptor. With those giant...
huge hips.
Yeah, fender flares. It doesn't like scream performance truck.
Yeah.
And yet it was. I mean, you could change the suspension to make it more Baja-y. You could change the exhaust to make it more off-roady or louder. But it doesn't scream like, hey, I'm a bro who never goes off-road, so I'm using this to flex.
Yeah.
And I like that about that. Maybe that holds it back in some ways. But to me, kind of being quietly confident is much more interesting and I think much more real than like screaming to the world, look at me, you know.
I've got
the TRX with the dinosaur sticker on it.
It wasn't so subtle that you didn't notice it because ours had the graphic on the side. Yeah. You can tell it's wider than a standard Ranger. There were a couple limitations to it. As a rock crawler, it wasn't the tallest. So we drag that sidestep on.
I don't get that sidestep. It should have a rock rail.
It's kind of a durable sidestep because it's made of decently thick metal, and we dragged it over rocks a lot.
I mean, this is one of those things that is becoming an issue, where manufacturers are torn between putting sidesteps, which because you've got to lift a truck.
Wasn't even that tall.
It wasn't that tall, but
because like the canyon.
But we're tall. Imagine if you're like, if let's say you're.
Well, you are.
You're I'm tall too. But let's say you're Mary, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you need the step.
Sure.
So there's this now conflict between off-roaders actually having rock rails, which provide no step, right? In fact, they do the exact opposite.
Yeah.
They kind of hide and tuck underneath the side of the truck versus steps. And a lot of the manufacturers are going with steps, except the second you have steps, like we had in the 4Runner, TRD Pro, which also has a step.
Kind of ruins your off-road.
I mean, it doesn't ruin it. You'll just tear the steps off.
Yeah.
Or bend them.
We tore up those steps a lot. But compared to the Canyon AT4X AEV edition that we had, that was a significantly taller truck than the Ranger Raptor. And that one had no sidestep. It was a bit of a jump up into that truck. But I don't think the Ranger Raptor is so tall that it needs a step.
Well, one of the solutions is those retractable side steps, which kind of serve
but then
as.
Then, if you damage those, that's.
Or if they're slow, they'll whack you in the shin when you open the door if you're not expecting the thing to pop out.
Yeah. So I don't know. The side steps we dragged a lot. The other limitation with the Ranger Raptor is as a truck, which is a big detractor for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Your tow rating, your payload is pretty limited on a truck with that soft off-road suspension.
What was the tow rating on that thing? It was less than 6, I think.
This Father's Day at Lowe's, score free gifts for the greatest dad. Right now, get a free select DeWalt, Craftsman, or Kobalt tool with purchase of a select battery kit. Plus, get a free Werner 2-foot aluminum ladder when you buy an 8-foot fiberglass ladder. Shop these deals and more this Father's Day at Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid through 6/15 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Yeah.
Maybe 5.5 if I remember right, or 5-ish.
Something like
it
that.
It was like
it's two a number we should remember.
Yeah, like 2 generations ago.
It wasn't a ton.
No.
It's not a heavy towing truck.
Because like a modern Gladiator Canyon,
there's mid-sizers that are towing over 7,000. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it wasn't a great truck for truck things. You could still throw stuff in the bed. You could pull a small trailer. But as an off-road truck, it was spectacular. Maybe the best deal on the market for any off-road truck.
Yeah, and it actually had, out of all the mid-size trucks, when we did this video, it had decent second row seat room. Like if you get a TRD
Better
Pro,
than the TRD Pro Tacoma.
Just use that for your dog.
That's like a parcel shelf in a 911. That's not even a back seat.
Exactly. So it had actually good back seat room. I didn't love the front seats. The reason for that was because they had this kind of weird pokiness where they would poke me right in the back of my shoulders. So I could never get comfortable. Maybe it's just my body type. But I've noticed that in some other Fords. The Nautilus has seats like that as well, where it's like they almost feel like they're convex. Which one's out when you're coming out?
Convex would be out.
Yeah. The top is like too convex, and it pokes you right where your neck kind of meets your shoulders.
Yeah.
And so I always had a hard time with that. And there we go. I also didn't like the e-lockers. Not that they're real lockers, but
built in the screen.
Yeah, I kind of like real buttons for that.
No matter what manufacturers say about it, putting buttons like that into the screen is always a cost cutting measure.
And there you go. There's a side.
Yeah, there's the side step up against a rock. Yeah. And that happened a lot. That was not an unusual.
Tommy knows it's happening.
Yeah, there's no way around it. But still, a really capable truck. I agree. Hard dedicated switches for lockers is a great thing. because it's also just a fun part of the experience of engaging them, if nothing else. Makes it feel like an occasion, like special. You think of a G-Wagon, those three switches on the dash. That's an essential part.
In the middle, right there.
Front and center.
Front and center, yeah, I love that. The other thing that is kind of unusual about all the Rangers is, especially the Raptor, this truck came out of Europe and Australia.
Yeah.
So it was not originally built for America.
Yeah.
And so it's more kind of toned down. That's why I'm saying I liked it, because it's kind of more toned down. It's not quite as shouty. And I think that's because I think it first came in its first alliteration, it was a diesel in Australia. And then eventually in America, of course, we don't apparently like diesels.
Other markets are going to get an even arguably cooler version of the Ranger that we're not going to see here in the States. And it's the Super Duty version of the Ranger that actually gets an 8-lug. It's got some off-road features. They make it kind of rugged. It's got a snorkel, seems like some underbody protection. It's got a higher tow rating. That is cool. How badly do you want that here in the States? Because I would want that pretty bad.
Yeah.
You can't tell. That might be cooler than the Ranger Raptor.
Bring it, Ford.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, an HD Ranger, what a cool idea. I think, look, the problem... The Ford,
look
there you go, with the chassis cab, with the built-in bed.
Yeah, that's so cool.
The problem that we have is that for a long time, Ford did away with the Ranger because they felt that it was cannibalizing F-150 sales. So now you're going to build a truck that is an HD midsize truck.
Yeah,
doesn't that feel like it's going to cannibalize F-150? That one actually
And that's
might.
Maybe part of the reason that they won't bring it here, but it is such a cool truck. It's one that we lust after. You would be the person to talk to about this. We might have to make a trip to Australia or somewhere just to do a video on one of these.
Yeah, Ford, if you're listening,
yeah,
can you get us one?
I'll raise my hand
for
that
trip. We'll volunteer to fly down to Sydney and take it out back.
That would probably be a pretty big video. So maybe we can work that out.
That is the most forbidden of forbidden fruit. The other thing I would say about the Ranger that I really liked is the fact that it's not that easy to get. And I know that sounds kind of snobby, but I like being the only one that has one.
Yeah, I see them around a little bit, but...
When I was at the dealership, and this is, of course, just from my experience, but they didn't have any.
Yeah, yeah. At least locally, here,
yeah.
To your point.
Yeah. And I bet you if I were to look locally, you wouldn't see a lot. So Ford is... I think they're built on the same, and I could be wrong, and if I am, please correct me, but I think they're built on the same assembly line as the Bronco.
Okay, yeah. I would believe it.
I think they share it, and Ford has certainly ramped up Bronco production, but they've kind of kept it kind of like the Raptor R, right? It's also not that easy to get. And one of the great things about that, which, you know, guy who's running a business loves, is we bought it for 57 and we sold it for 53, I believe. So we only lost $4,000 after 10,000 miles and a year of ownership.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was a really good ownership experience of that truck. But we've had a lot of other good trucks as well.
I want to get your take. So let's talk about heavy duty now. Let's jump there. So we had the Ram 2500 Cummins.
Yep.
For a long time because it was such a useful truck. I think we put 30 or 40,000 miles on it.
Which for us is a lot because typically for us with film and videos, people get tired of a vehicle before we're necessarily tired of it. And so we sell them generally after about a year. We had this truck for 3 years, maybe?
Yeah, we had it for a very long time.
It was just so useful.
It was. And we traded it in on a we sold it and got a Silverado Trail Boss.
A Duramax.
Duramax. And we did that on purpose because we kind of like to mix it up, right? So we're not thought of as just Ford people or Ram people or Chevy people, you know, Duramax, Cummins, Super
We do have a lot of Fords right now.
We do.
Which,
but we're changing
actually,
that.
Yeah, you...
We can't
we
talk,
won't
we'll
spoil
talk about
it here. But Roman just bought another truck that's not a Ford. So, you know, we try to balance out.
We try to balance it. So I've kind of got mixed feelings about the Ram 2500 Cummins that we had. First, I like the fact that the design and the truck felt about as trucky as a truck can feel, right? So,
yeah,
so the design, when they designed this, they kind of used a semi to inspire them, let's say. And the front end is very semi-like with, you know, with the higher hood, the kind of headlights and the placement of the headlights and the big bumper. And so out of all of the heavy-duty trucks, this certainly felt the most truck-like.
Especially with a straight-six diesel. I mean, you know,
yeah, exactly.
The Duramax and the Powerstroke, they're great engines. I am partial to the Cummins because of the sound and feel.
Yeah.
And I mean, so much so that I own one. That's what my personal truck is. There are definitely ways in which this truck was behind the times, transmission especially, when everyone...
The six speed.
Yeah, when everyone's got 10 speeds, you know, GM and Ford have 10 speeds, and this particular Ram, obviously they've got an 8-speed now, but this one in particular, being older, had a 6-speed, and that made it feel behind, especially when we're up in the mountains, we're towing heavy trailers. Having all of those gear ratios to choose from in a 10-speed makes a big difference. So in that way, this truck felt a little dated in its powertrain.
Yeah, and we had the Bighorn, so it was kind of the mid-level.
Yeah.
And so we didn't have what's the Bighorn, right? Yeah.
Believe so.
Yeah, yeah. And we didn't have you know, leather seats. We didn't have any of the fancy thrills that most trucks...
That truck had the perfect amount of tech and features.
It did. It was right.
Slightly smaller screen.
Everything you need, nothing you don't. So yeah. It was pretty easy to use.
That was a nice, comfortable truck.
Yeah. It had, I would say, out of all the trucks that we've tested, or one of the best brake controllers and engine brakes. Yeah.
Yeah.
The engine brake was super functional. I mean, really
great.
We've got Mr. Truck taking it, I believe, up and over the Ike gauntlet. But man, that exhaust brake was a winner.
It was, especially here in the mountains. It makes a huge difference because we tow on steep grades frequently. And on that truck in particular, the exhaust brake worked.
Now we're showing the Duramax.
Really, really well. Yeah. Yeah. Now there's a Duramax pulled up. But
we'll get back to it. He's showing a little stuff to the Duramax. But there you go. But I love the sound that it made. It was about as close to a semi truck as you can get. When you activated that thing, you knew it was on, right?
Yeah. It made a good noise.
I like the Chevy. You don't even know it's on. But with this thing, it was like.
No, it was sweet. And over time, we ended up modifying our Cummins. So it was on 37s. It had a big AEV steel bumper with a 16,000-pound winch in it.
I love that.
We could use it to recover
some
very stuck vehicles, which was sweet because that thing was just a land anchor. And that made it a very versatile truck. Obviously, lifting a truck, making it heavier, doesn't make it any better for towing. But this had so much capability with towing that for our use case, we didn't really limit what we could pull, because we're usually just pulling a car hauler with one vehicle on it, so still well within what the truck could do, lifted on bigger tires. But then when we ended up in places like Moab, we could use this truck to run some trails. So it just made it a Swiss Army knife of a vehicle that we got a lot of use out of, and that's the reason that we held on to it for so long, because it just made sense to have around.
Yeah, Cole, if you could find some of the newer videos of that truck, that AEV bumper, thank you, AEV.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that was just absolutely beautiful. So we did the front and the rear AV bumper.
Yeah.
The sad part about that was those are expensive.
Because
they're about.
But you get what you pay for.
Yeah,
it's nice.
The AV stuff is about as close to OEM as you're going to get.
Yeah, because there's a lot of steel bumpers out there that look like they were made in someone's shed, and the AEV bumper was nicely formed and curved. There's a reason that a lot of OEMs work with AEV. They make good quality stuff. This is not news that I'm breaking.
There it
Most
is, right
people
there.
Know that.
Look at that. Look at this. Well, no. That was when Andre called it the Trailhound. But anyway, we probably put like at least $10,000 worth of between the winch.
Yeah, and BDS suspension, KMC wheels, if I remember
right. None of that back when we sold it.
No, and that's how it goes modifying stuff. But we got a lot of use out of it because of the way that it was equipped. I will say this truck off-road, in low range, the throttle modulation was a little herky-jerky. It was kind of difficult to get it crawl smooth.
You got those AV lights on it. It's just a really good-looking. I think it's a really good-looking truck.
It was. The new Cummins in low range are much smoother and drive a lot nicer than ours did. This one was just hard to drive
smooth.
There
was
in low
one
range.
Thing that we improved because Well, and you can see it in this picture. Look at those auxiliary lights.
Yeah.
And basically, you needed those because the headlights that came on it were like two candles. Really,
which is not unusual in an HD truck.
I know, but for God's sakes, come on, guys. You got this monster that's roaming the earth.
And compared to my second gen, those headlights are incredible.
And no one can see you coming, and you can't see anybody else coming. You've got two candles. These are not LEDs. These are just standard.
They're halogens.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and in the world of LEDs, they just were not good.
When I was driving with Tommy cross country in that 1984 Civic, and Andy was behind us in that truck pulling a side-by-side on a trailer to get to California, sitting in the Civic with that behind me, the headlights looked pretty bright.
Well, it was lifted by that point.
I ended up turning both of the mirrors away from me because I wasn't passing anyone in a 1984 Civic.
Well, look how much higher it is. I mean, that thing was definitely... Yeah. And that's another thing. Toyota, I have to applaud Toyota because Toyota is one of the only manufacturers that does this with their halogen lights where they give you a little switch.
To adjust them up and down.
So if you're towing and you're squatting a little bit, you can actually aim them down. On some of the newer trucks, when you've got the full-on, not LEDs, but Xeons, they actually adjust automatically.
Which is cool, especially when you load up a truck with a heavy trailer or a lot in the bed and you end up leveling it out. Or even squatting it a little bit, then your headlights can be pointing pretty high. So it's definitely a nice feature. But overall, this was an awesome truck. We got so much use out of it.
Loved it.
Can't complain.
It did drink DEF fluid a lot.
Yeah, but
I don't think
any more than usual.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, I've heard people say you're supposed to fill it up every 10,000 miles. My gut says that's 5,000
sure
too many.
That. Yeah,
especially if you're towing.
Yeah, so, yeah, that was a good truck.
All right, and then we replaced it with the truck that we have now, which is a Silverado 2500 Duramax Trail Boss.
Yeah.
We kind of went from, obviously, a Cummins to a Duramax, from Ram to Chevy, and we did that on purpose because we wanted to, you know, try something different. And so far, I'm very pleased with our Silverado Heavy Duty.
Yeah, it is. It's a Trail Boss, and as far as being labeled... As such, it's not necessarily very surprisingly, it's not the best off-road truck.
Let's face it.
Mostly because of its size.
Most heavy-duty trucks are not great off-road.
But one of the things that bugs me about this one in particular is the wheel design.
Okay, what do you think about the wheel design?
The wheel design, the face of the wheel, if you look at it here, is very flush. And there's even center caps that for this video we pulled off that stick way further out.
So you scratch it up.
So on an already very wide truck, that wheel design with the spokes being very flush with the sidewall would be incredibly difficult to not rub on everything on the trail, which is part of the reason that we went to Ram Off-Road Park in Colorado Springs, because it's this wide open area where you're not really going to run into issues with width. But it's a massive truck, and always size and weight are going to be a detriment to any vehicle off-road.
Let me ask you this. If you could have any truck to go exclusively off-roading, and I'm talking about not just like off-roading like this, but you know, in the trees. If you could have a compact, mid-size, full-size, or HD, anyone. You don't have to name the truck. Yeah. What size would you take?
It'd be a mid-size.
It'd be a mid-size, exactly. Yeah. I'm there too, right?
Especially because we live in Colorado, where there's a lot of narrow trails.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, the dirty secret to heavy-duty trucks is you can take a Tremor, or you can take, you know, you could raptorize a heavy-duty Super Duty, right? And it's still going to be pretty crap off-road just because of its sheer size.
When your truck's over 8,000 pounds, you're really fighting the laws of physics to try and get these trucks over serious obstacles. And it's 100% possible. People do it. It's impressive to watch. It looks really cool. But the experience of doing it and being behind the wheel trying to run a trail in an HD truck,
ultimately, first you can't see out of it. All you're seeing is
the
hood and sky.
So tall.
Yeah.
And look, I don't think this is breaking news to anybody because these HD trucks are designed to tow, but there are a lot of off-road packages on these vehicles, which is why we test them off-road. And yeah, you're fighting an uphill battle trying to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like an elephant in a china shop. I mean, it's just
it's not graceful.
It's going to break things.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if you're using them to tow, there is no better vehicle in the world on the highway than a heavy-duty truck, especially a diesel, pulling a load. It's just like peanut butter and jelly. The two go together. I drove this truck to California to pick up our 4Runner. I loved it. And what separated this, I think, from the Ram is that the interior is much more car-like. There's not a lot of truck left in the interior, at least. The seats, I know.
The bumper.
Yeah, ouch. Ouch. That's what we do.
Yeah.
But, you know, the experience of being in the new Silverado is so much more car-like than truck-like. And at the end of the day, I always thought of myself as a truck guy, but I like the comfort that the Silverado provides.
I think it's a good interior, and it's not overly plush because that can get to be a little strange sometimes in a truck that's meant to do work, and you get in there and you're grimy and you're touching all these nice leathers and materials.
Yeah, we didn't get the, you know, this is not the Denali.
Yeah.
It's not the King Ranch.
Also, to our previous point about these trucks off-road, I am still a fan of the off-road packages on these trucks because even if you're not going to go do a bunch of trails in Moab, if you're trying to pull a trailer somewhere rugged, having a slightly more aggressive tire and a rear locker or a limited slip or a G80 or whatever can help you out. So if I were shopping for an HD truck, I probably would get an off-road package just to have a little bit more capability if I'm pulling a trailer through snow or through a dirt lot. It's our job to test the limitations of them off-road, and it's not that hard to find those limitations.
So in this POV Andre cam, you're seeing some of the things I love about the interior. First, Chevy kept real switches, these little toggle switches, and they're very tactile, and they're easy to use, and I just think they're very intuitive versus putting everything like we were talking about in the Ranger Raptor in the screen. I also like the fact that they separated the HVAC from the toggle switches from the radio controls, and it's all in little separate levels up in the truck. Really find it comfortable. My biggest issue with all GM trucks are the seats. I don't know. They just don't have enough thigh support.
And you're not alone in that.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, so there's ways where the interior is pretty comfortable and nicely equipped. The seats is maybe one of the downsides, but in general, I agree. It's a good truck all around with a good interior, very useful. We haven't had it for as long as we had the Ram, so there's still more for us to learn about it, but I think it's a good machine.
Yeah, the hidden secret to HD trucks, which I think a lot of people aren't aware of, is that cab-wise, they're the same as a full-size truck.
Yeah.
So the cab in this 2500 that we're looking at is the same size as the cab in the regular Silverado. I know you guys just bashed the hell out of it. You're like, look what we did to the rock. And I'm thinking to myself, what did you do to the truck?
Yeah. Sometimes you almost feel more bad for the earth than the truck.
The other thing that was kind of painful about the truck was I was backing it up into the garage here, and I kind of cracked the rearview mirror on the thing, the passenger rear mirror, because it got kind of...
it's a wide truck.
Yeah, anyway, $1,000 to fix it. There's a lot in that rearview mirror.
That's an expensive mirror.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just another reason I like old trucks, but that's a different story for a different day.
So there is a scratch. So if when we go to sell this thing, you guys are thinking about, is this a TFL truck? Just look underneath it.
And it's a little spit shine. It'll be fine.
You'll figure it out pretty quickly. If you had to choose, I know you're kind of a Cummins guy because you got a Cummins. Which would you choose? Would you take the Ram or the Silverado?
It's a tough call because the powertrain on the Duramax I think is objectively better, even though I like the experience and the feel of the straight six. I think stock to stock I would pick the Duramax, but the way that we equipped our Cummins with 37s and the AEV bumpers and the winch made it such a Swiss Army knife that I would pick the Cummins the way it was when we left it over the way our Duramax is now.
Fair.
So both of them bone stock, I'd pick the Duramax.
All right, well, let's switch from the biggest truck that we've ever owned to the smallest one, which is the Ford Maverick that we bought last year and we've had now for 6 months. And I have to say, Case, our little Maverick, and the reason we bought the Maverick, it's been out a while, I'm sure you know, is because this is the first year where you can get it both
hybrid
and all-wheel drive.
Which is a big deal.
Which is a big deal, yeah, because we're getting like, mid-40s for an all-wheel drive truck, which is pretty damn good. And I have to say, Case, this has become quickly one of my favorite trucks we've ever owned.
I'm going to have to balance you out a little bit.
Fair.
Because we said a lot of good things about the Ranger Raptor.
Yeah.
And I genuinely, just because I like that truck a lot, you like that truck a lot. So I'm going to have to balance you out a little bit here with the Maverick. And I agree, it is a good truck. It's as much truck as most people objectively need. It gets great fuel economy. It's not an off-road truck at all.
No,
it did not do well on our slip test. The Tremor would do much better than this.
But then you won't get the hybrid, right? This way you can have your cake and eat it too. But you're right. If you're thinking about this as an off-roader, so my initial thought was we'd put the FX4 package on this, and you can't.
Didn't you want us to take this to Moab?
I did.
Yeah, that would have been bad. Yeah. I'm glad we didn't do that.
Yeah, so I get it. I think what the engineers were tasked with was creating a very fuel-efficient truck that also has all-wheel drive.
Yeah.
But I want it all, dude. I want it also be able to go off-road, and this thing does not want to go off-road.
It's not – there's a model for that. It's the Tremor. That's not what we have. So, it's not a huge knock against this truck that it's not good off-road. But it's just worth saying that it's not. We tried it, and it doesn't want to do it. It is extremely efficient. It works well in the snow because it's all-wheel drive. It tows really well. It's got a pretty useful, albeit small, bed.
You know what else? You know what I was thinking about, which is crazy. So the Maverick, the Raptor, not the Raptor, the Bronco Sport, and the Escape are all based on the same chassis, right?
Yeah.
It started with the Escape, and then they built these two other vehicles on it. And the Escape is objectively a pretty bad car. In that segment, it is not one of the leaders.
Yeah.
And yet, when you turn it into a truck and you turn it into an off-roader, somehow some magic happens and it becomes...
They definitely get better.
They get a lot better, yeah. And it's the same chassis, same powertrain. And here's a good example of why you don't want to take it off-road.
Yeah, it's struggling a lot. To your point, this truck is good at a lot of things. This has been pretty much your daily driver for the last 6 months.
Yeah, I found about 6,000 miles on it.
Yeah.
Which is a lot for us because I'm also driving all kinds of other things. I'm traveling a lot. So that's about as many miles as I've ever put on something. And the reason is because I'll give you the reason why I like it so much. First and foremost, it's just easy to live with.
Yeah.
Right? It's easy to park. It's easy on the fuel budget.
And it's useful. You can toss stuff in the bed.
You can toss stuff. It's, my mom died, as you're aware, and I had to move out all of her stuff out of her apartment. And this was a perfect little truck because the apartment parking space isn't huge. And so this just slotted right in. I was able to load up a lot of stuff, take it to the dump, go back and do it again. And like you said, I think you're right. It's pretty much the perfect truck for most people. But we don't buy trucks for what we use them for. We buy them for what we think we're going to use them for, mostly.
Yeah.
I do that, at least. And this thing just served so well. It's also got everything you need, nothing you don't. So we've got we were going to get the base model with the steel wheels, but we got the XLT because Tommy wanted to buy it eventually from the company. So he wanted the tech package. He wanted the heated seats. He wanted the heated steering wheels, so it ended up being $36,000,
which
is a lot.
That's one knock against it, because when the Maverick initially came out, the starting price was under $20,000. Now the starting price is around 26 or 27.
27, it's yeah.
Something,
and then it quickly got to 36.
It's about 10 grand more expensive starting than it was when it first came out. So the truck is not nearly as affordable as it used to be, which is true of a lot of trucks. But there's that. The other thing I will say is the interior of this truck looks cool. I love the design. There's cool textures, colors. They did a good job with that. But the actual materials quality is, like with a lot of Fords, not spectacular.
There's a lot of cheap plastics.
Yeah, there is. There's
a lot of cheap plastics. But
it looks cool.
On the plus side, it's kind of a cheerful interior. That's another reason we upgraded to the XLT, right? The base one is just a sea of gray. This one, as you can tell, has a little bit of blue, has a little bit of splashes of color.
Textures. I love the little textures and things they put on the dash that make it look a little more interesting than just a fleet car spec interior.
No piano black, which is wonderful. So
piano black would look weird in that interior.
It looks weird anywhere you put it. It collects every ounce of dust that is in the air. It's horrible. But there is no piano black, which is nice. And it actually, if I remember right, has a pretty incredible payload. It's got a payload of like 1,400 pounds.
Yeah.
Which is, full-size truck.
For a little truck, it's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that in this Ike, Andre is wearing his cowboy hat to pull a K-truck.
I was talking to Ford, and their belief, and I think they're not wrong about this, is that a lot of people buy Mavericks who would normally buy SUVs. This is what you're saying with the hat, right? These are not necessarily typical truck buyers.
And
these are car buyers.
Cool thing about it is if you're... if you're shopping for this vehicle is arguably every bit as practical and more than a crossover. So you could potentially get yourself a vehicle that I think is more interesting than a lot of crossovers, this versus a Tiguan or something.
Yeah, and it tows 4,000 pounds, which is not, you know, nothing.
Not nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's not going to tow your big-ass boat, but yeah, it will tow a K-truck.
Yeah, which is not so bad. And even at its max, even towing 4,000 pounds, it does it pretty competently. Going uphill on the Ike, it's definitely howling a little bit. It makes some noise. It's just that drone the whole time going uphill.
Now you got to drive the Lobo, right?
Yeah.
So you went on the Lobo program, and Edmunds, good job, guys. They just did a video where they did a thorough test of the Lobo. We haven't had it at the office yet, yeah, so we will test it, but you know, it's harder here in Colorado than it is in California.
We don't have as much
right
availability of press vehicles.
Yep, and those guys are doing some great work, but what they figured out was that the Lobo Maverick is actually slower and stops longer than the other versions of it. They gave it, you know, better brakes, they gave it a better transmission apparently, but the one thing they didn't give the Lobo was more power, which is a head scratcher, right?
I mean, it's got more power than our hybrid Maverick,
but not so, more power than a regular.
Yeah, or like the Tremor.
Yeah, wouldn't you like give it like 50 more horsepower?
Yeah.
Right, if you're building a sport truck.
It would be nice. So I drove the Maverick. It feels sporty. They put us on an autocross, and it was surprisingly fun for a little pickup truck on that autocross. So I enjoyed driving it. I wasn't driving it on the autocross back-to-back with other models. It was just there with other Lobos. That was specifically what we were there for. So it would be interesting to do some performance testing like what you're talking about. I have a hard time believing it's slower than our hybrid. Well,
watch that Edmunds video. Maybe it wasn't a hybrid. Maybe it was the non-hybrid. I don't know. But it wasn't any it wasn't the fastest Maverick, which it should be.
I would wager that I'm sure we're going to get a Lobo at some point, and I hope then we still have our hybrid Maverick. I would still wager if we put this Lobo up against our hybrid Maverick in a quarter-mile drag race, this is going to win.
Ford,
it's got more horsepower.
Ford, are you listening? Please, lend us a Lobo, and we'll drag race the two.
I think it's going to happen. Oh, look how cool I look in a helmet.
Nobody looks good in that three-quarter helmet.
Just squish.
Look at a squirrel.
Yeah,
right?
Squishing my already big cheeks together. So that's great. Yeah, but no, it's a fun truck to drive. If nothing else, it's not the fastest vehicle in the world, nor does it claim to be. It is fun to drive.
Remember remember when we had the ZR2 Silverado?
The hearing aid beige one?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, thank you for that, yeah. Tommy, because he came up with that. The issue with that was it was meant to be a Raptor competitor, and yet they didn't breathe any more power into the powertrain. And so it had all of the stuff like, you know, suspension, the look, right, the bumpers, but it didn't have the one thing that made the Raptor unique, which was more power. And this is, I kind of feel like Ford has gone down that road with the Lobo, where they forgot the most important part, which is slap a, you know, a bigger turbo on it, or slap a, I don't know, can you slap a supercharger on a four-cylinder? I'm sure you can. Do something to make it actually perform better,
yeah,
and then raise the horsepower, and then add the bits and pieces of suspension that you need to handle that power. There's a hearing aid beige or two.
Yeah. When you look at it in that context, it's not an exciting looking color, huh?
You know, we kept that thing for like 2 months.
Yeah.
Which says a lot of.
And I think the ZR2 was a good truck. I like the fact that it's got selectable front and rear lockers, which, you know, the Raptor.
But we kept the Trail Boss version of that for like a year. Remember,
yeah,
we had that red Trail Boss as well.
Not necessarily because it's a better truck.
It had more bandwidth.
I think it was as soon as you heard
hearing
the
aid
phrase
beige,
hearing aid beige, you wanted to get rid of the ZR2 as soon as possible.
No, I just didn't feel like I felt like it was like it, you know, it wrote a check you couldn't cash.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought the ZR2 was okay. I didn't dislike that truck that much. I thought it offered a couple things that were arguably useful. It's better on a narrow trail than a TRX or an RHO or a Raptor because it's not that big wide body.
Okay, so you got like 6 inches more.
And selectable lockers. So I think in a way it can be a better crawler. Plus it's got a V8, which is over $100,000 to get in a Raptor.
Yeah.
So I think it had some things going for it. I liked the ZR2, and it maybe especially in a different color. I think it was a pretty decent looking truck.
It needs like a wider body kit.
It's not a poster truck. To your point, it's not the most exciting.
I mean, for being the most off-road worthy, top of the line Chevy Silverado 1500, it just didn't bring it.
Should we talk about some of our Toyota trucks? Because that's a brand that we haven't brought up.
Yeah, let's go for it. Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you want to do? You want to talk about, I mean, the Tacoma is our most recent.
Yeah, the Tacoma. So we obviously we broke our Tacoma. Yeah, we snapped a part that Toyota says was supposed to snap, which is one of the shafts.
Yeah, and that was very early on. Because of what we do for a living, we get to be some of the first people to bring these things off-road, which is really cool. And what was going on is they had a software feature there where initially, if you were in the rock crawl setting, it would grab at the brakes on the traction control system very aggressively.
So what happened, according to Toyota, was, you know, we were going up the kind of toward the Razor Rocks, and it was snow on the ground, and so we were in the wrong mode given the situation, not for what we were doing, but for what the truck was trying to do. And so what would happen is first the rear wheels would start to spin and it would grab the brakes and send all the torque to the front wheels. And then the front wheels would start to spin and then it would grab the spinning wheel, and which meant that all the torque went to one wheel, which snapped the shaft.
Yeah, and I want to actually come to your defense on that, because they say you were in the wrong mode. Look, you were rock crawling in the snow.
Yeah.
So rock crawl or slippery are, I think, to me, call me crazy, are valid modes to be in. You are rock crawling, even though there's snow on the rocks. So there was another outlet that described what Toyota did to fix this problem as idiot-proofing it, basically indirectly saying that
I was an idiot.
Yeah, which I think is unfair because you were rock crawling it. But basically, they made the traction control programming less aggressive so that it wouldn't grab at the brake and snap that portion of the differential that is designed to be...
Oh, there it goes. It just broke. You saw it.
Yeah, it's that part of the differential is designed to be the weak point so that it doesn't, you know, snap a drive shaft in half or something that's going to disable the vehicle.
And here's
the
look on my face saying, oh shit, I gotta call Toyota.
Yeah. So, it wasn't ideal, but I don't think it was that unreasonable.
Did you see Andre's truck made it up that?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was
with just a G80.
Yeah. His old Colorado was up there, and I was struggling. And that could be due to tires too, obviously, because those are the most important thing. Look, I really like Blueberry. That's what we called the Tacoma.
Yeah. It was a good truck, a useful one.
I really liked it. I did have a small few issues with it. And keep in mind, guys, we're not like most car and truck buyers in that for us, these are business tools.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people are like, well, you need to do a long-term review, which is, you know, wait, you've had it for 10 years or
150,000 miles.
Yeah. But there's a lot of money wrapped up in these vehicles. And if they're not earning their keep, in other words, if you guys aren't watching videos, then we have to move them on.
Most people don't want to see 10 years worth of videos on the same vehicle.
No.
A lot of people get tired after three videos, so we have to get real creative to make the most.
So keep that in mind. And we're not looking at these vehicles as your typical, even though we try to be your typical truck owner. We're looking at them in terms of professional testing, in terms of, you know, how they do compare to their competitors. That is really kind of the editorial bent. And I like this truck a lot, and I was very sad to let it go. There were a couple things that I didn't like about it. First, I felt like, and this is a lot of the Toyota products now, you're paying a lot, but you're not getting a lot in terms of interior. A lot of hard plastics, like our current 4Runner, we paid $57,000 for, and it's got single zone climate, which seems you know, absurd. You could go get Palisade, for instance, that would be swathed in leather. It would have like 15 zone.
Yeah, and the 4Runner has a much more substantial platform than the Palisade. The Palisade's always going to be more of a value proposition and features.
Yeah, but I'm saying there are manufacturers out there who are not cutting expenses. Like the thing you pay for in a Toyota is the reputation for reliability and its inability to depreciate, which is wonderful, which in the long run is wonderful.
Yeah, but because but, we We just sold our 4Runner and
we did. We'll say that.
Little. Yeah, we can say we lost very little.
Yeah, oh, we can say that. Yeah, so yeah. We bought it for 58 and we sold it for 57.
Yeah, which is great.
Yeah, after like
versus every time we buy a Land Rover and lose 20 grand.
I mean, we tend to buy high and sell low.
Yeah,
which is not great. But I always felt like this truck, you know, was kind of short shrifting us in terms of its interior a little bit. Hard plastics. And I know trucks are supposed to be that. But when you get up to a truck that starts costing as much as or more than the average car, then you need to kind of up your game a little bit. Look at all those empty switches.
Yeah.
I mean, that just feels like, what didn't I get?
The poverty buttons.
Yes.
And I do think that the materials in this interior are part of the reason that it's durable. A lot of those plastics hold up pretty well over time. And I think this is another case like the Maverick, where it's in pictures and everything. It's a cool-looking interior. Maybe doesn't feel exceptionally high quality. But yeah, I agree. It's not the most amount of features for the money. I think the Tacoma in general is a little bit on the pricey side across the lineup of all the different trims you can get. But this TRD Off-Road was a generally useful truck.
And I have to say, speaking of Rider Justice and our friend Scott, if you guys are looking for a new podcast, check out Case over at Carish.
Thank God. It's not just me.
No, it's Tommy and Mary and Jen. Whew. In case. But it's one of our fastest growing podcasts. That's because you guys do a great job. It's more general than deep dive.
Yeah.
So check out Carish.
Yeah, we talk about cars, but you can also hear Tommy's thoughts on kitchen appliances because that comes up pretty much every episode.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, all kinds of different topics.
So where I was going with all this was if I were a typical mid-sized truck customer, I would have kept a Tacoma. I wouldn't have sold it. I liked it that much. And I know I'm kind of whinging about, you know, the materials, but I loved the look of the thing. I loved its utility. I loved its new powertrain, which people hate. But I thought for as much as the four-cylinder turbo did not make me happy in the 4Runner, it worked well in the truck because it was very trucky.
Yeah, and you've got a lot more low-end torque
and
more gear ratios to choose from. You know, the old Tacoma had a 6-speed and an engine that really only made its power at the top end. So especially pulling a trailer, especially up here at altitude and especially on steep grades, it felt like it was working hard. And that's just not a good feeling. So for all the flack that the new powertrains get from the Toyota faithful, the enthusiasts, it drives a lot better, objectively. There's just no way around it. And in the 4Runner especially, I know people love the 4-liter V6, but that 5-speed, a 5-speed automatic in 2024 is not really acceptable.
All right, in the last few minutes before we wrap this up, Case, let's talk about our newest addition to the fleet, which is the Ford F-150 Tremor, which we just purchased a couple of weeks ago. So I just actually took it and towed across country with it. And what we kind of got.
Where'd you go in it?
I went to Salt Lake City and picked up.
What you pulled the camper with?
Yeah, the Australian camper with it, which weighed like 7,500 pounds. And the reason we bought the F-150 Tremor was because it's a throwback truck, and that is it's got, I think, only 10% of Ford trucks now come with the Coyote V8.
Yeah, this one's got the V8. It's got the Tremor package, so it's got some off-road capability.
There are two Tremor packages. This one's got the lower of the two. So we got, I think, a pretty good deal on it. I want to say we paid $63,000 for it. So like there's an upper Tremor, which gets you more, but I'm a big fan of, you know, everything you need and nothing you don't. It's the one where the best video call is the one where we went and bought it, I think, because there aren't many videos with it yet.
Yeah,
so it's the one where you got to go the other way. It's the one where it's kind of blacked out. Keep going. Let's see here.
We're trying to find the video, but it is a good truck. It's got a lot of things
going
for it.
Go down a little bit, would you?
It's a really cool color.
Yeah.
This truck.
Hearing aid beige?
No, it's not hearing aid.
How come we can't find it? Scroll up. I just saw it.
Go we do too way. Many videos is
we
the
do
problem.
We do too many videos.
This portion of the podcast where we're trying to find a video to pull up
the
truck.
Oh, there it is. It's to the right.
Is going
to
be great for...
By Raptor. There it is. Okay.
It's going to be great for people on the audio version.
Yeah, they're going to love this. Sorry about that, guys. But if you want to watch it, you can go over to a TFL Talk.
Yeah.
It's the thing I love about it is it's got the Coyote.
Yeah, yeah. V8s are great.
V8s are great.
They're fun. The truck sounds good.
The truck sounds good. It's not the most powerful. The 3.5 EcoBoost would have more power, and I found that pulling the trailer, it didn't struggle, but it didn't make it look easy.
It's got enough power. We could put a supercharger on it if we need to.
We could. We might do that, but we need it right now in stock form before we do anything to it to compare to other trucks that we're going to get.
But maybe not for too long.
You want a supercharger.
Who doesn't?
We drove one in this video with a supercharger. It has the whine. It doesn't have the exhaust. But what I love about it is it's one of those trucks, once again, that it has everything you need but nothing you don't. So it kind of goes right down the middle. Yeah. It's got cloth seats. It's got, you know, enough creature comforts that you feel comfortable. It's also, like I said, the Tremor, so you feel special driving it, but it doesn't have all the bells and whistles, you know, that a full on Raptor would have, where you're kind of out there flexing your, it's kind of
a little more subtle, but it's just a really handsome truck. It's a good color. It's somewhere in between gray and white, so a very interesting color. It's got a blacked out Ford logo in the grill, those orange accents.
It's got a little bit of purple thrown in.
A bluish, grayish white. Yeah. It's an interesting color. One that you especially appreciate seeing it in person.
They call it, I think, something to do with space. Like space white, I think, is the name of the color. So imagine NASA-ish.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. It's got a really great look. It's got a slightly more aggressive tire. It's got, rear locker?
Yep.
So it'll be a decent truck.
Doesn't have the Torsen front end, which the more aggressive Tremor would have, which is fine.
Yeah, this is not going to be our primary off-road truck. This is going to be one that splits the difference, kind of like with our TRD Off-Road Tacoma, like with some other trucks that we've had. This will be able to pull a trailer. It'll be able to do a light trail.
Yeah, it tows 10,000.
Yeah.
Which is fine. It has those side steps again. We're back to the side steps, unfortunately. Yeah. But we'll be doing a lot
Ford
more
loves
with this.
Those side steps.
I can tell you one thing, you know, so I drove it to Salt Lake City, then to Moab and then back, and that is probably 1,000 miles. That's probably more than 1,000. That's probably more like, that's close to 1,000-ish.
Yeah.
And then two-thirds of that I was towing a trailer. And I got to tell you, it's a super comfortable truck.
Yeah,
It's just very great for long distance.
It is funny seeing the rake on the truck.
Andre hates the rake.
Hey, I think it makes sense. I've got an old Ram pickup, so I'm used to the rake.
That's
down.
His new thing, right? I was asking what that was about for his thumbnails.
His new thumbnail pose.
Yeah, he does that thing where he looks like he's a sprinter about to go out of the box.
Yeah, but no, this is a cool truck, one that you did that trip in, but that we haven't put a ton of miles on yet. So we'll learn more about it over time.
Two things did disappoint. First, it didn't come with a bed liner. So
yeah,
first
we fixed that pretty quick.
Had a bed liner. And then in there in the video, you saw it didn't have the wheel well liners as well. Mm-hmm. And you just, it's like looking up the skirt of somebody.
It's such a weird place where it feels like Ford cheaps out. A lot of their trucks don't, even expensive ones, don't come with the liners. Come on.
I mean, they're not expensive.
Yeah, right?
So I had to put those in as
How
well.
How much is a little piece of plastic?
I know. And plus, if you're off-roading it or if you're mudding or something, all that
stuff. Just flinging stuff all over.
All over the place. Yeah. It seems like a no-brainer. It just seems like that's the kind of thing where you feel like those empty slots in the Tacoma, right? Where what didn't I pay for? And why not? Where you feel like no longer a valued customer, but as the British would say, a punter.
Yeah, it's just when it's that apparent cost cutting, it feels a little
makes
weird.
Makes you feel stupid, right?
How much was this truck?
62. It was like 68, and then because of Ford pricing. By the way, guys. Yeah. I thought Ford pricing was a gimmick. It's not. It's actually really good. So thank you to the tariffs, at least now. And I was talking to Josh, the manager over at Brighton Ford, and he said that most people who kind of figured out what Ford pricing was have already bought trucks.
Yeah.
But if you haven't, it actually is a significant discount. I want to say it was 68. We got it for 62.
Yeah, there's still some decent deals out there off sticker, which is nice because there's a lot of sticker shock going on with trucks. No way around it.
Yeah.
They're pricey.
I mean, everything feels 10K too much.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah, 10 to 20 maybe.
Now we're getting toward 15. All right. Well, let's wrap this up, Case. Guys, head on over to Carish if you want to have Case and the gang entertain you with, what was the last one you did? You were trying to figure out what car celebrities drove?
Yeah, that was interesting. Tommy's knowledge of celebrities is
not
very
good.
very strange.
No, his pop culture knowledge has never been his strong suit. And of course, head on over to alltfl.com. And next week, we'll return to regular scheduled programming with Andre.
Yeah, he'll be back.
He'll be back. And yeah, I'm gonna surprise him with something. I can't say what, and I hate that. I hate doing these, like, this is a podcaster thing where they're like, well, we can't talk about it. I really can't talk about this, not because the manufacturer, but because it would
wreck
the video.
Andre will hear it.
Yeah, Andre will hear it. So don't listen to this, Andre. We've got a surprise for you on Monday.
It's got a bed, so he'll like it.
He'll like it. All right. We'll see you guys next time. Ciao.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariana. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.